There is a place that is spoken about only in whispers. A dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends. A place where anything can happen, and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free, and things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country, and there is no escaping it, no matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
Good evening and welcome. This is Darkness Radio's Beyond the Darkness, your home for the best in paranormal talk radio, five nights a week. And tonight, Tim, we're going to be taking a look at near-death experiences and the after effects. We've been kind of exploring this more recently because we, you know, with what I've gone through with death in the last year here, many of our friends are going through. I'm still really seeking answers. And I don't know that I'm necessarily comfortable with the answers I'm getting. So I'm trying to reach out to as many people as I can. And what's funny is you find that sometimes when you're on these journeys, these quests to get more information, how many people it's touching. You know, I've been surprised at the response from listeners around the world regarding these near-death shows and how their curiosity is piqued by this. Even a fascinating aspect of this is I get a lot of emails from people that are atheists and have no belief at all that we go anywhere. We just are like a candle in the wind, and when it's done, it's done. We're blown out and that's all. But they've been fascinated by the topics and the stories, and especially hearing the wide breadth of different guests that we've had talking about this.
I'm always fascinated by the atheist point of view.
In what sense?
Well, you know, it's a scary place to come from.
What, just that nothing exists after this?
Yeah.
Oh, right. That's what's been part of my terrifying trip for 49 years, is just the fear that when death comes for us, that's it. And, you know, I've talked about more of the personal reasons over the last few weeks of why that really is getting into my head. Even more so, you know, as I'm approaching 50 years old, you know, is it because I can feel the clock ticking in my own life? The sands of my hourglass are running through. And, you know, man, look at all the people we've lost in the last few years, celebrities, friends, you know, and you just realize how fleeting this all is. And what does come next? Are you comforted? I mean, we've been doing the show a long time.
Yeah.
Are you comforted with the experiences you've had with after-death visitations, that you feel that there is something more to this life and what comes next?
I do. I feel right. Between interviews that we've done with people here, talking to different people in the field, talking to people who've had experiences and reading people's experiences on air, I do. I feel more comforted now, 12 years later, than I did before we started.
Right. Logically, you would think that would be the way it would go and progress. I feel no comfort yet. Really? When I hear some of the stories, I'm like, oh, that's really great. That sounds nice. And then I get home and I'm like, I just still don't know. And it's it eats away at me. It's like a cancer. You know, I mean, everybody's got their issues. Mine is death. You know, I get beautiful emails from listeners around the world telling me, stop worrying about death. I wish I could. You know, you can't just shut it off. It when you have a fear like this, and it's been a part of your life, your entire life, it's hard to just shut it off. And as many things as I hear from experiencers and listeners, there's so many different aspects of science that I read talking about these near-death experiences that put me on a different path. And what does that mean? You know, is this just the chemical reaction of the brain shutting down and firing off memories? It just seems that they put them in. You'd think if the brain is really shutting down and you're having a near-death experience, that it wouldn't fire off memories that would make a linear sense, like seeing a white light, going through it, seeing friends and relatives, reviewing your life, talking to a higher presence. I mean, unless you've been front loaded like many of us have, but right. You still think the chaotic nature of the brain shutting down during death would create, you know, I see a peanut butter cookie. I see a reindeer. I see a foot. Yeah. I see trees.
Very random things.
Right. It would just be as all the switches are going off
right,
in your brain. So there's some of that that brings me comfort. But due to the fact that I've had truly a few near-death experiences, moments when I should have died, a couple when I did die with surgeries and issues, but I have no recollection, no light, no voices, nothing. That scares the living crap out of me. Why can't I have that? I just want the comfort of knowing that, oh, you'll all be fine, Dave. Come to us someday, but not now, right? We all want that comfort of feeling like we've got a home to go to when we leave here.
We do want that comfort, but then again, there's something about being too assured. I mean, I would ask you this question.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you had that, if you had the "we're all here, Dave" experience,
mm-hmm.
I still get the feeling that you question it.
My grandfather came to visit me after his death, mm-hmm. and I had that dream experience, which is beautiful and vivid.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me that.
Yeah.
And he gave me answers, and I still am uncomfortable. I wonder, and again, I don't know how much of it is me forcing a round peg into a square hole or a square hole or a square peg into a round hole kind of thing, but I wonder how much of it is dealing with depression most of my life and dealing with the dark side in that aspect of being broken down. I wonder if this is my – it's going to sound strange, but is it my survival mode that keeps me terrified of death? Because knowing I'm also a person that's battled depression my whole life, by keeping a healthy fear and respect of death in play, does that help keep me from – you know, I mean, I put the gun in my mouth when I was a teenager. You know, there's been a few times I've faced that moment. You know, I don't do that now. I've got children and I feel that's to me, I look at it as I would never want to give my kids the nod that, hey, if things get bad, you can always kill yourself. But I wonder if part of my fear and overwhelming fear continues because it's a good way to keep the depression in check and balance so that I don't give in to that dark streak from time to time.
Well, there's two things there too. There's the anxiety over the unknown, mm-hmm. which we all go through. But for a huge section of us too, there's the ability to not be able to control the circumstance. I think when somebody commits suicide, they're controlling their circumstance. So in that way, they can justify, I'm taking myself out of the situation. I'm taking myself away from the pain. If you are taken by natural circumstances, you're now taken out of your situation. You're now taken out of this life and you don't have control. And I think if you combine those factors and you're saying, okay, well, I'm no longer in control and you like to be in control of things, you all of a sudden, your world is blown up and you want to be assured that you're going to be in control when you leave this world to go on to whatever is next.
That isn't silly. I mean, the fact is you either go somewhere or you don't. I mean, that's your choice, right?
Yeah.
At the end of this life, we will either continue on or we won't.
Right.
And if we don't, I won't know. And you'd think that that would bring me some kind of comfort because it's not like I would lay there torturing and languishing in a dark hellhole for eternity. You just, if it's truly a light going out, it's a light going out. That doesn't bring me any peace. That doesn't bring me any comfort at all. But that's why we're going to continue to experience this and talk to people who've made this their research and their focal point. We have two guests joining us for this evening. Let's start off with Heather Dominguez. She's joining us and she's working on a book. She's got a book and a documentary, Consciousness Continues, Near-Death Experiences and the After Effects. Heather Dominguez, welcome to the show this evening.
Hi, David. It's nice to be here. Thank you for having us.
Well, it's my pleasure. And I know we'll introduce Sharon Milliman in a little bit, but I wanted to kind of start off with your story. Since this is your project, what brought you to wanting to research or understand the phenomena of near-death experiences?
Well, church never felt right to me. And so my whole life, up until about 24, I was searching for something that felt real. One day I was out at this little college thing where you can try out classes. And I was dodging away from my mother-in-law at the time, and I just dodged into this dark room. Right. And there playing was the Danny and Brinkley story on in this dark room. And it was about Danny and Brinkley. I don't know if you know his story. But
yes, we've had him on the show, yeah.
Yeah, one of the first things that came out back in the 90s about near-death experiences that went really, you know, video-wise, that went really, you know, national. And I sat there and I watched it and I knew that it was true. I just sat there just like blown away, which I felt like afterwards I felt like something clicked in me, you know. And so I started to go to the meetings because I was told even if you don't have a near-death experience, you're invited to come. Because most near-death experiencers want to tell their story. They've actually sort of been told to come back and tell their story. And so they invite you. And so I went into that, and I went to those meetings for a few years, but then I lost touch with that. And I always sort of kept the subject sort of like in my back pocket as something I know, and that if anyone ever needed it, I would pull it out and I tell it to people, somebody that just lost a loved one, or usually that's when it would happen, somebody that just lost a loved one. And I would just say, you know, I'll tell them the story of near-death experiences and to soothe them, that they know that their loved one is there somewhere, and it, all these people have seen the light, or they've been through the experience, or it's not always the light, but, you know. And it seems to bring comfort to me and to other people. So then later on, I'll be frank with you, I had some serious health issues. I was living in Mexico and I started having strokes. And at the time, I didn't know it was strokes. The doctor thought I had anxiety, of course. But then I came back to the U.S., got an MRI, and it turned out I'd had 5 strokes. And so I had already started film school in 2013 at a late age. I was 38. And there I was. I went through film school. I started having these strokes. And you get this feeling of your time's running out. You know, they were minor strokes. I don't have any permanent damage, but I do have, you know, the dead parts in my brain. And so you start feeling like you need to do something with your life, which is interesting. And I heard you talking about how, you know, you sort of have that feeling that you want to know what's going to happen because of your age. It's just sort of like your time's running out. So when it came time for me to work on my thesis, I always spend a lot of time. I had a friend that I spent a lot of time talking about near-death experiences, and we would just go round and round, and she started vigorously researching it. And I have to make my decision what to do my thesis on. And I was like, well, I had to make a 12-minute film. This is how this all started. And I was like, there's no way I can tell the whole near-death experience in 12 minutes. That's insane. I can't do it. She's like, Heather, you should just do it. Just film everything for a feature film, and then cut 12 minutes out of it, and then you'll have your project to work on afterwards. And I was like, I can't do it. So I put together these 3 ideas, and I went and talked to my advisor that was helping me choose, you know, what to do. And they just, all my ideas, he just hated them. So that day, it was funny because I didn't really want to do the NDE thing, but when it got turned down, I was like, well, I want to do it. You know, isn't that funny? So I like go home and I was calling my friends. And I was like, can you believe he turned this down? And then I talked to somebody else and they're like, Heather, you should just do it. And in the moment that I was trying to really make my decision, I had like a few hours, like 12 hours to make my decision. I had to go back and write up a proposal and all this stuff. And in that time when I was making the decision, a whole series over a period of about 10 minutes of surreal things happened. This book I had ordered 20 hours before about a near-death experience showed up at my door. I just got a knock. I walked there. Amazon never delivered like that at that time in 2012 unless you ordered it like one day, right? Just showed up at my door. Then I go back to my computer and I'm sitting there and I hear a freight train. And I'm like, where is the freight train? And I lived by a commuter train. I look out, there was no commuter train. And so I'm just sitting there, what the on earth? And I found out on a tab on my computer, there was a spiritual story opened on one of my browser windows, but I hadn't clicked on it and I hadn't opened it, but it was literally a freight train. And then my friend called me that I've known for like 25 years. And she just felt compelled to call me and tell me of the spiritual experience that she just had by talking to this Buddhist person. And so it all happened like within 5 minutes of while I was trying to make this decision. And I was like, okay. And I like looked up to the, you know, to the up, and I was just like, okay, I get it. I'll do it. So that's how I started decided, I mean, I started with the project. And then after that, things kind of came together. I actually met the man that was running the Danny and Brinkley story. He was 74 back when that happened. He was still alive. So I emailed him. He was still alive. He answered my email in like an hour. I was like, oh my gosh, he's like 94. And it was funny. And I want to not just make a story about near-death experiences. I want to go beyond that. I want to make a story about near-death experiences and the after effects, because that's the bigger part of the story. That's the part of the story that people don't really spend that much time talking about. They talk about, oh, this is how it was over there, but they don't talk about how it profoundly changes their life in good ways and bad ways after their near-death experience. And so,
were you surprised to hear that? I mean, we all assume you're going to have these beautiful moments and come back and it will have inspired us to lead a better life, or it would be a positive. Were you surprised that there were negative aspects of near-death experiences?
Well, back in 1994, when I went to my very first IANS meeting, I walked in there and there was like four or five near-death experiencers sitting there, and they were not a happy bunch. And the consensus was, why did I have to come back? That was home. That was where I really belong. That was where unconditional love is. Why am I forced to come back? There's anger. There's depression. So I knew from when I basically first learned about it that it was there. But it is counterintuitive. I understand what you're saying. And the general public does have an opinion like, oh, you're lucky you had this, or what, you know what I mean? Like, you've got this new view on life and you got to have this profound experience. And we didn't. But there's a lot more to it that people aren't talking about. There's a lot of baggage that comes with it. Of course, it's beautiful, but it's a process. For some people, it takes 10 years to process it. For some years, most people that have a near-death experience, they're continually integrating that experience into their life for the rest of their life.
I would think that as a researcher, it would be more compelling to actually run into people that are dealing with this kind of survivor's remorse, in a sense. As opposed to, oh yeah, there was lights and trees and beautiful colors and I saw mommy and daddy and now my life is better and I help everyone. You'd think, okay, this sounds rehearsed and this, but to actually, hear the other side where they're just despondent and kind of, upset by the situation. To me, that makes this an even more believable, phenomena, if you will. Did you feel that when you were looking into this as well, that it wasn't just rainbows and buttercups?
I'll tell you, that's something PMH Atwater, who's a researcher on the subject, she has 15 books out on it, she's part [S2] Right. [S1] Of my project, that's something that she talks about. She says, be careful to make an assumption. Somebody that had a good experience to assume that they welcomed this experience, because a lot of people will say, no, my life is a wreck now since I've had this experience, because they, you know, they want to go back. But sometimes people that have had a negative experience, they say the opposite thing, that it changed their life and they brought them back with a renewed wanting to be here. You know, so you never know. The only person I personally met that didn't have that feeling like they really just want to go back and they're happy they're here. There's two people, actually, the two people that had negative experiences. It's really interesting. It's because when they have the negative experience, they're basically told to go back and do it right. Like, it's like you're in a video game and you screwed up that level. Go back to the beginning of the level or whatever, and you need to do better. You know, and so they're like, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do better. Now, one lady, Kathy McDaniel, who's in my project, she keeps saying, you know, I think I felt like I've done what I'm supposed to do. Why am I still here? I guess there's more I still have to do, you know, but she kind of has that feeling that she wants to go back to, because she had a little snippet of, she had like a purgatory experience, but then she had like a little snippet of the heavenly experience at the end. And so she has that. She wants to go back there, not the other place,
right.
Not the purgatory place.
Right.
We
had that on our show a few weeks back on our Theater of the Mind. One of the listeners shared their experience of a very dark near-death experience where they felt that they, without calling it hell, you didn't know what else to call it. It was a brutal, vicious experience. And, you know, he came back hoping that there really is a second chance, and that giving this opportunity, he could set things on the right path and hopefully end up in a much better place next time he visits. So when you were collecting these stories, how many did you come across where it was a hell-like experience or purgatory?
Two out of the 15 that I have. And that seems about right, actually. I mean, the odds, the percentages are like, I'd have to look it up again. I'm sorry I didn't get that number, but it's like 15% of all near-death experiences. Negative experience?
What was it about these people? Were they, former killers? What was it about them that set them apart that they had a negative experience?
That's really difficult to answer, but I will tell you this, what Paul said to me, and he's committed suicide. He was in the military. He was living his life for what everybody thought he should do. Mm-hmm. He was living his life because he thought he should live this way. This is how he's trying to make everybody else happy, but not looking in his heart and trying to live from his heart. And so he became depressed, because I think you get so out of touch with your own soul. I don't know. He was very depressed, and he was in the military, and things weren't going that well in his marriage. And he took a bottle of pills and drank a couple bottles of hard alcohol and went upstairs and hung himself. And his wife at the time came up and found him, got him down. His face was black. And during that time, he had this scary, it's sort of vague. He didn't tell me all the details, but he did say this. It was a void. It was darkness, but fuzzy grayness. There was some energies there, and they wanted to take him somewhere else worse, somewhere more horrible. And they communicated to him that what he needed to do is he needs to live for him. But it's hard. It's just confusing for people, because it's not, when they say live for himself, they mean live from your heart, like do right. What's in your heart. So some people hear this and they go, oh, they're saying to be selfish. I don't believe this. And that's not really what it is. Or it depends how you look at it. So sometimes it is to live from your heart. Sometimes truly is a selfish thing to do, but in a good way, selfish, you know,
I totally get that. Right.
What I mean? Like right. Honesty and purity and goodness and kindness and forgiveness. That's actually a selfish thing if you think about it, because you lose all the baggage.
Well, our listener sent in a story a few weeks ago. He said, you know, I lived a decent life. I never thought of myself as a bad guy. And he suffered a heart attack. And had a horrific experience, something that you would expect you'd hear from Charles Manson or Ted Bundy. Wow. And he couldn't wrap his head around the idea of why he found himself there. And that was another aspect of the whole thing that I find absolutely terrifying. That it is so different for so many people, but when they find these dark places, they, you know, and again, maybe he's not telling us the whole story. I don't know what his life was like before, but doesn't it seem strange, though, Heather, that these people would go there to this dark place, and that if the dark really wanted them, why wouldn't they just keep them? Why would they say, all right, you can go back, you get one more chance at this? It just seems to me like that's counterproductive for hell, right? If they want to win this battle and they want more souls, why were they allowing the near-death experience and teaching a lesson?
Well, you know, there's a lot of views on why this happens. Some people think that when you go there, you get what you're expecting, but other people say they were a complete atheist, like Louisa. She was actually an adamant atheist. She wrote her college thesis about atheism and, the advent of modernism. I don't know. I haven't read it, but that she was like hardcore atheist, even though she'd had this near-death experience, actually that was afterwards. Sorry, I'm getting a little confused. But and here she has this near-death experience when she was an atheist, and she had a loving, beautiful experience. So that part doesn't make sense. But other people say that what happens to you is what you believe. Like if you don't believe anything, maybe that you go into the blackness. I don't know. Or another thing about it is that maybe,
Well, did that experience change her? Is she still an atheist to this day, or did that put her into more of a religious context for her life?
She stayed in denial for years.
Wow.
14 spiritual things happened to her that were where she couldn't argue with it, you know. Mm-hmm. She kept trying to sweep it under the rug, but 14 things happened and it just got so overwhelming that she finally just had to accept it, because she was so hardcore an atheist that she just put it into a box, locked it away and put it away and tried to pretend like that didn't happen. But she knew in the deep parts of her soul that it was real. And so finally she did, she stopped fighting it and she finally accepted it.
All right, let's do this. We need to take a break. When we come back, I want you to introduce us to Sharon Milliman. She's a part of your participant in your project. She's a multiple near-death experiencer. We'll cover that when we return. We've got more coming your way. This is the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness.
Then into this tunnel, toward this light. And it was the most beautiful light I ever saw. And I heard this voice. And it was the most beautiful voice I ever heard. And it said,
"Beyond the darkness."
And we're back here on Beyond the Darkness. Later on this week, Will Jevning joins us, and we're going to be talking about the cannibal giants of the Haunted Valley, a native legend of these large bipedal creatures that have been eating humans for centuries, Tim.
Centuries.
And it still continues today. We're going to hear some of these stories and these predatory behaviors of these Sasquatch-like people. That takes place on Friday, plus a very creepy theater of the mind. Again, if you're not an outdoorsman, even if you are, it might creep you out. We had a really freaky Bigfoot encounter story in one of our first episodes. In Theater of the Mind. Mm-hmm. And this one is very bizarre. So make sure you check that out. That's this Friday on Beyond the Darkness. Tonight, we're talking about the project Consciousness Continues, Near-Death Experiences and the After Effects. And our guest, Heather Dominguez, has been with us. Now, Heather, you've got somebody joining us this evening. Tell us a little bit about Sharon and how you two came to know each other.
Oh, Sharon Milliman, who's here, she's a really loving, kind soul that I met actually through Facebook. I had my project, which was originally called Surviving Death, up on Facebook, and I was just sharing it around, and she sent me a private message and started to tell me I think she asked me a question about something, and I tried to soothe her and we just started talking, and we finally got on the phone and we spent a few hours the very first time we talked. And I said, can I interview you? So we did. At the time, I was doing research interviews on webcam, and then my actual footage was, in person. So this was sort of a research interview, and it was just fantastic. She's so compelling. She has such a zen to her that it's like she's been touched by an angel, or she actually is. So that's how we met.
All right. Well, now joining us on the show for the remainder of the evening, Sharon Milliman. Sharon, thank you so much for being here this evening.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Now, could you hear at the beginning of the show while Tim and I were kind of discussing our thoughts on the subject of near-death experiences?
Yes, I heard you.
What would you say to somebody like me, or to me right now, Sharon, who has had moments where he should have, was dead, but had no experience whatsoever, has this overwhelming lifetime fear of death? As somebody who is a multiple near-death experiencer, what advice would you have for me on why things happen the way they did and why I would have no memory or visions or light or love or light?
Oh, you might have had an experience and you just don't remember it.
Okay. All right. Now, you've had multiple experiences. How old were you the first time this happened to you?
Well, actually, I've had bits and pieces of memories from when I was even as small as birth. But my first one that I can actually remember most all of it was when I was 13 and I drowned in a 10-foot end of the pool at the Y.
All right. What happened to you? I mean, you were swimming and things just went horribly wrong. Were you wrestling, playing? What was the situation that led you up to that?
I was taking swimming lessons, and my swim instructor wanted us to dive head first into the 10-foot section, and I just couldn't do it. And he told me, he said, well, either you're going to do it or I'm going to throw you in. And he threw me in. And I struggled for a bit, and finally I took in so much water that I sunk to the bottom of the pool. Ooh. And I was just laying on the bottom of the pool, and this beautiful light, at first it looked like a light bulb, and then it just got bigger and bigger. And as it got closer to me, I was able to see everybody that was around the pool. And of course, I'm on the bottom of the pool, so I don't know how that was possible other than I was out of my body at the time. And I could see my mom, who was in the balcony on the opposite end of the pool, and she was leaning over the balcony, and she was screaming at the lifeguard to come in and get me, and he was just frozen. And there was another lady lifeguard on the opposite end of the pool with the small children, and I could hear her screaming to the lifeguard. She kept saying, Bob, go in and get her. And he was just, I could see his face like he was standing over me, and he was just frozen solid. He couldn't move. And all the other kids were screaming. Everybody was yelling and screaming, but nobody was doing anything. And I was just laying right there on the bottom. And I remember looking upward and seeing the water rippling on top of the pool. And the light, it just kept getting bigger and brighter, and it was so warm, and I just felt so cozy, like I was wrapped in a blanket, and I never felt such love in my life. It was just huge love, and this presence that was in the light, and as that light kept getting closer and closer, and I was just drawn to that light, and just as that light was ready to touch me, there was another lifeguard on the other side of the pool that had the middle-aged kids. He had dived into the pool, and he grabbed me, and he grabbed me around my stomach, and he was pulling me out of the pool. But just as he did that, I heard this metal door slamming shut, and I just remember feeling this horrible, horrific pain, and I was throwing up water and coughing, and he was squeezing on me and pressing on me, and he had dragged me over to the side of the, laid me down on top of the concrete next to the pool and was pressing on me to get me to breathe. And then I would just, all I remember after that was seeing people's legs.
Okay.
They were all standing around me, and I just saw people's legs.
Now, and, can I ask, I hope this doesn't sound too morbid or bizarre as a question, but you did something that's very rare. You died. When you were dying and on that, your consciousness, as you said, was kind of out. You were projecting and seeing these things going on around you. Do you have any memory of awareness that, oh my God, I'm dying? Do you have memory of it hurting while you were dying? What can you tell us about that?
The only thing that I remember was just a couple of minutes of panic. Right after he threw me into the water, and as I was taking in the water, but once I had was sinking down to the bottom, there was no pain whatsoever, none. And I remember as I was sinking to the bottom and I was laying on the bottom of the pool, I felt And I remember thinking this as I was looking at the light and it was coming down. I was thinking, I feel so warm and cozy and comfortable. And this isn't painful at all. This is wonderful. And that light was coming down and I felt such love. And I thought, this is just awesome. This is not painful at all or scary or nothing. And I do remember thinking that. So
your first experience was not so much heavenly. It was more out of body experience, correct?
I guess that would be,
okay.
Correct.
Now, let me ask you, Heather, as you talk to many experiencers of this, are there different levels like this where, you know, some just experience the out of body, some, whisk off to heaven or hell, some just stand there and kind of watch what's going on? How does this break down? Are there, you know, close encounters? We know there's first, second, third, fourth, and fifth kind. What is there in a near-death experience?
Well, I don't know how to like rate it by levels, but there certainly is people that just pop over, see a light, feel like they're held, or they just see a light and then they're back. Exactly. There's some people that have like a quantum physics experience, and they can explain in detail shapes and the universe and being taught about novas. They see space. And many people say, probably even Sharon, I think that she, in one of her experiences, she got universal knowledge. There's all sorts of levels. So, but I don't know how to like say to grade them.
All right. Well, I just didn't know if that was something that was part of research in near-death experiences. How many total experiences did you have, Sharon?
Well, including the birth one,
right?
That would be four.
Now you have memory of being born?
I have bits and pieces of memory. Yes.
And this bits and pieces of memory, what can you tell us about it? Was it memory of a past life, of consciousness, no, of being aware? What exactly would it be?
I remember this is a particular. I remember being inside of my mom. I remember her. Having issues. I remember seeing there was this being standing outside of her. It was a tall being in a brilliant light, and I saw the being inside the brilliant light, and he leaned over her inside of an ambulance. And there was a ambulance, a medical person sitting at her feet, holding me inside with some kind of forceps, holding me in. And she was in a lot of pain, and I hear a whooshing sound and everything goes black. Then I hear another whooshing sound and everything becomes bright pink again. And the being leans over and touches her stomach. And then I'm being born. That's what I remember.
Wow, that's impactful. Do you find that there are other experiencers like this that can have memories going back all the way and clear memories going back to birth, Heather?
Well, I have heard of one other one, but she hadn't explained it to me. I think, though, that it is common. The thing about not remembering your death experience, such as in your instance, sometimes it's not revealed to you until you're ready to know it, you know. And sometimes people don't remember things for years and years, and then all of a sudden they remember it.
All right. We've heard about your first couple there, Sharon. Did you have the heavenly experience as well, where you witnessed past loved ones and the white light and God, or the godlike essence?
Yes, I had a really huge one in 2005. I was sitting outside talking on a cordless phone, and it had begun to rain, and a lightning bolt came out of the sky and hit my arm, and then traveled underneath the house and blew the transformer in front of our house. And it left char marks on the concrete stairs where I was sitting. And then I died. So I did go to heaven, and it was absolutely the most beautiful experience in the world. I don't even have words. It was so beautiful.
There's a really aspect of her story right here, though, that she just left out. She had some sort of time thing happen before she went to heaven. Can you tell about that, Sharon? The very first thing that happened after you were struck by lightning?
Okay. After the lightning hit me, my spirit lifted up out of my body, and I went into my house, and I knew that it was my house, but everything in my house was not my stuff. Everything had a burnt gold look to it. My curtains weren't my curtains. All of my furniture wasn't my furniture. And I could hear, now, since the transformer in front of my house was blown to pieces,
right,
everything in the neighborhood was without power for about 4 hours. So we had no power. And there was this old-time radio show playing in my house. Sounded like something from the Waltons. So I'm floating or walking, but not walking on the floor, but walking through my house. And I'm looking at furniture that was like back in the 20s and 30s. And nothing in my house belonged to me. It was so odd. And so I'm walking through the rooms, and I'm looking at everything that is not my stuff. And I'm hearing this radio, and I'm looking through the house trying to find this radio. And I couldn't find it. And my husband had, not the one I'm married to now, but my husband at the time, had just come home. So I was trying to find him, and he wasn't in the house. My children were not in the house. I didn't know where anybody was at. And it had gotten to the point where I was becoming frightened and extremely agitated. And just at that point, I started moving sideways, not up, not down, but sideways through these beautiful pink and gold clouds. And I was moving very, very fast through these pink and gold clouds. And there was this huge presence with me. And this presence was formless, but it was like this presence was so huge, and it just like bear hugged me, you know, just wrapped me up in this enormous love. I didn't even know how to describe it. It just filled every pore in my body, just filled me up with this love. And it was just like being bear hugged by this presence. And the two of us were traveling through these pink and gold clouds. And when we got through those clouds, we were in this beautiful garden. And my two brothers, who had died as babies, were there to greet me, but they were grown men by the time. At first, when I saw them, I thought they were angels. But then it was like, oh my gosh, I know who you are. And there they were. They were full-grown men. They were probably the age of late 20s, early 30s. And they were absolutely illuminated. They looked like surfer dudes. They looked like they had just got off the beach. You know, they had just absolutely glowing. They were so beautiful. And I noticed the clothes that they were wearing, the intricate weave pattern of the cloth of the clothing that they were wearing kind of stuck out to me. And
it was just like a joyous family reunion. And then after the reunion was over, they walked with me a little bit further into this beautiful garden where the colors were so rich and vibrant, and the pinks were pinker, the reds were red, the yellows were more yellow, and you take the most beautiful spring day and multiply it by 10 bazillion, and that's what you see. And the music there is fabulous. It's like everything has a sound. The grass has a sound. The trees have a sound. The rocks have a sound. And everything, the water has a sound, and each color has a sound, like the rainbow, each color of the rainbow has a sound.
How are you not overloaded, sensory overload, having all of that tactile, the sounds, the brightness, the contrast? How are you not just, you know, downloading too much information, I guess?
Well, number one, your senses are so heightened and you're vibrating at such a high level because where you are is so vibrating at such a high level. And when I was there, it felt like I had a giant IV bottle of divine knowledge being infused into me. And I was being given all of this God knowledge, you know. It was like he was telling me all of this, the answers to all of the questions of the universe, you know. He was telling me how everything was put together. I didn't even have the answers. I mean, the questions, I didn't have the words to ask the questions before he was giving me the answers of how the world was put together, how the universe was put together, how physics was put together, how, you know, everything. And it was like one giant aha moment after another. And I kept saying, oh my God, you're so awesome. And, you know, I kept saying, we human beings are so complicated and you, God, are so simple. You know, it's just, we don't have to make things so complicated. It's not that complicated. But then anyway, then we went a little bit further and I was given my life review. And it was like watching a old fashioned movie reel and a black and white movie. And I got to see everything that I'd ever said or did or thought or felt. And it was just like over in a blink of an eye. It was, and there was no judgment. And there was a
whole
bunch of
people. There was no judgment by anybody else, but was there by yourself? Did you recall seeing moments where you were like, oh, damn, why did I do that?
Actually, I didn't judge myself either. I just kind of looked at my two brothers and I said, is that it? Is that all?
Well, then you better get out and start living your life a little bit more. Sharon, you got to do some stuff to be ashamed of, because, man, I can tell you, I'm going to be cringing through 90% of my film. I'll be asking for the fast forward remote. That's not going to go well for me at all. So you have this grand an experience. And then how does it end? Does God go, well, sorry to keep pulling you out by accident, Sharon, but you're going back? I mean, how does that return you?
Well, after all of that, I sat down I met with Jesus, and then Jesus took me over to this beautiful wooded glen, and I sat down and had a conversation with God. And then
See, that's why I don't remember my experience. Jesus was not taking my calls that day. That's got to be it, right? He's hiding in his office, going, "Tell him I'm out of town. Tell him I'm not here." I've seen his life review. I'm not letting him in here. I know where he's been. So you have this life review. Now, okay, I've got to ask this question. So does Jesus have a look? Does he look like the white Anglo-Saxon long-haired Fabio beauty we've created? Or did he look like Jesus probably would have looked back in his day?
Well, he has beautiful brown eyes and olive-colored skin. And he has long, very dark hair, wavy, very dark hair. And
yeah, I was just curious because I know, most of our perceptions of what Jesus is from what we see in paintings all around the United States. And, you know, usually it's a blue-eyed, very fair-skinned, you know, light brown hair, kind of 70s parted down the middle Jesus cut. I'm just curious.
He doesn't look like Fabio.
Right. I'm just curious what the reality of the Jesus meeting was. And when you're with him, I mean, is he with you alone or is he with you before everybody you know? How is that meeting?
Well, when I was with him, my brothers were standing there and there was other people standing there, but I only had eyes for Jesus. So everybody else kind of disappeared as far as I was concerned. Now, if they were still standing there, it was like, I don't even know you're standing here because I am so all about Jesus.
So. I want to see that t-shirt on you next time I see a picture, Sharon. My eyes are for Jesus only. I see.
Oh my goodness.
Did he explain why you had to come back?
I do not remember that part of the conversation. Okay. And I can probably guarantee it was not a good conversation. I was probably not happy, and I came back kicking and screaming all the way.
Oh, see, that's why they sent good-looking Jesus to try to bring you down. He's like, hey, don't worry. We'll hang out next time. Yeah, next time you're here, I promise we're going to hang out. I'll put you down for it right now, Sharon. I'm going to pencil you in. We are going to eat scones, and we're going to watch The Bachelor together. Just relax. It's all good.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a deal.
Jesus, the ladies' man. Now we know the real secrets of this documentary, Heather. what was it like then to return to life?
Wow, it was so hard, and my life was just absolutely turned so upside down. when I first came back, I came back and I was in what I called the pink bubble because I didn't know what else to call it. I was in this oneness with God. I mean, you can't sit and be face to face with God and not come back and still be in that
glow,
that
sure
oneness with him. So I lived in that pink bubble for 6 months, and then life was so this world seemed so cruel and so harsh in comparison to where I was before. And it just kind of, I came out of it. And
did the thought of ending your life ever occur to you to think, man, I want to get back there and I'm going to go back now?
No, I never thought of doing that because I knew that just wasn't, that was not going to get me anywhere. But okay. I did go through periods of very deep depression, and it was very, very, very hard. And my marriage ended, my life fell apart for a while, and it's been a struggle. It really has been. And I just had another near-death experience 4 months ago.
Holy cow, what happened this time?
I had an emergency surgery because of a bowel obstruction. Mm-hmm. And
I ended up going right back to the same place I was before. Only I was standing at the Golden Wall right outside the city. Before I was in the garden, this time I was, and I could see the city, and I did see the outskirts of the city. This time I was standing at the Golden Wall, just right outside.
So every time you're getting a little closer.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So the next time, well, guess what? we better have those phones soon.
Right. Was Jesus there this time, or was he hiding? She's back already?
He was inside having the party. There was a party going on, so he was inside having the party.
He had a lot
Can
of
I
wine.
Say something, David?
He's got a lot of water to turn into wine in there, doesn't he? Yeah, please, Heather, go ahead.
Well, I wanted to say that not everybody has like a Jesus experience or even a religious figure experience, but some people say that what you believe is what's going to show up for you while mm-hmm. you're there. And a lot of people that go there say that it doesn't matter what you call this, the being, the God being, godlike or supreme being or, you know, the whatever it is, that you could call it Bubba, you could call it Jesus, you could call it Buddha. It's just love. It's just God. It's hard to put a name on it. So actually in my book and in my project and the docuseries, I think there's maybe one other person that said that they experienced specifically Jesus. One person had like a board. It was like a business meeting. Now her life was very business. The way she lived her life, she was a business person. And here she is on the other side. And it was like a business meeting. You know, some people that didn't have any spiritual thing, this went there and there wasn't anything. You know, I don't know. And
so
then other people had their...
So our afterlife is what we perceive it to be. So now, obviously, Sharon is concentrating on Jesus in tight jeans and a really nice T-shirt, right?
I'm not saying that the afterlife is necessarily what you expect it to be, but the gate to the afterlife tries to make you feel comfortable so you're not scared.
Man, Tim, did you hear that? Sense? It's going to be parachute pants, and it's going to be feathered hair, and it's going to be bandanas when I get to heaven, and it's going to be rocking 80s music, brother. And my bud Jesus is going to be hanging out there, passing around Zima and Bartles and James, because that's my era. That's what heaven is going to be like for me. And Heather Locklear will be there waiting to meet me, Tim. Just fair warning.
In your gateway.
Yeah. Well, I'm guessing that's got to be it. If not, I'm going to feel like you cheated me, and I'm coming back for you, Dominguez. Do you hear me? I'm coming back for you.
I'm fine.
Yeah.
You won't be vindictive by the time you hit that point. You just think.
Yeah. Wait till I get there and find out there's no feathered hair and no bandanas. You'll find out how vindictive I can be. That's awesome. So yeah, the whole idea of what we perceive. See, that's part of what terrifies the hell out of me, because I'm so afraid it's going to be nothing. I don't want to create it to be nothing. So do I just create a visualization, picture, you know, bowls of Reese's peanut butter cups that never make me fat, full head of hair, Jesus Christ looks a lot like the guys from Miami Vice, and we're going to just be chilling. I don't know. I need some perception value here, because I got to start making myself feel better about the concept of death, because it scares the living crap out of me.
Well, don't be scared. Think of Heather Locklear and Reese's peanut butter cups.
Just my luck. I'll be standing there in front of Heather Locklear, and then Jesus's voice is going to come out and go, dude, knock it off.
You know what I hear is I hear this quite a bit, but like someone has had this experience, they're over there, maybe there's nothing there, or it's negative, it's scary, and then a thought occurs to them like, what about God, or what about light, or, you know, something's bad's maybe happening, and they're sort of feeling like they have to go with it, and then they're like, wait, you know, what about God, and all of a sudden, a little teeny spark of light shows up, and then that light gets bigger and bigger, and they feel not really sure if it's coming to them or they're going to it, but then the light gets bigger and bigger. It's just like, it's like that saying a lot of times in religion that you have, and free will, that you have to look for it. You have to ask for it.
All right. I am now going to get a tattoo on the back of my hand that says, "What about God?" So when I'm standing in that in that dark void facing the reality of all of the horrific things I've done in my life, I'm going to just look down and go, "Oh, yeah. Hey, what about God?" And I'll be taken up. Go. That's all right. Very I like that. I like that there's a parachute I can pull at some point during this journey. Do you feel comforted? Not that you're looking forward to death, Sharon, but do you look forward to that day eventually?
Yes, I do.
Heather, has this research brought comfort to you in your life of that we carry on, that there's more to this than the silliness that we live here on Earth?
Oh, yeah. I mean, who wouldn't want to be where you're loved unconditionally and you're with your in your true home where you can just be with all these petty things that run through our minds and self-criticism and worrying about what people think? I mean, that's just the natural way to be, I think.
What do you hope people get from this book and from the docuseries you're working on, Heather? Where is the what's the end game for you on this?
Well, you know what I really want is this is what one of my big motivations has been through this is that these people that have had it an experience, their families shut them out often. They say, "You're crazy," or "I don't believe you. It was the drugs. You are dreaming." And the near-death experiences are usually more real to the people that experienced it than our daily reality. It stays in their mind so crystal clear than what they had for breakfast yesterday. You know, it's like it's so profound. And then their families turn on them and people try to say you're crazy. So they start to bottle up their feelings. So what my end game is that if people can just open their minds to let someone that's had this experience just tell their story, you know, let them just be open-minded to listen to it and take what you can take from it, learn what you can learn, but don't judge it and shut it down.
Sharon, were you judged when you came back? Did people you loved think you were crazy?
Oh, yes.
Really?
Yes, they did. In fact, my husband at the time tried to have me committed into a hospital. And when he took me to the hospital and the doctor came in and talked to me, I told him everything that had happened, and the doctor said, "You had a spiritual experience. You don't need to be here. And if there's any problem at all, it's with the family, not with you." So he sent me home.
Why would, all right, you know, it'd be one thing if Sharon came back from this near-death experience and said, "Hey, you know, the ghost of Elvis said I have to kill you, honey." Then, yeah, maybe we check you into the loony bin. But if you're coming back having had a beautiful experience that brings you peace and that why would there be any kind of resentment or negative judgment on a case like this?
Well, because when you come back,
you're not the same.
No, you're not the same. I wasn't the same. I had changed. I was completely different, and he didn't like the changes that he saw. And not only that, but you come back with different kind of, you come back with gifts, so to speak. Okay. And
the veil has been lifted.
Right.
That's what happened.
Are you sure he just wasn't feeling the pressure of now I got to go up against my wife's crush on Jesus? That's got to be overwhelming as a husband.
Well, the thing is, I'd always had a crush on Jesus, even ever since I was a little girl. He was my first love.
Very cool. Very cool. Hey, that's just such a strange atmosphere. Are there support groups for near-death experiencers out there?
Yeah, it's called IANS, the International Association of Near-Death Studies, and that's where I went up to the Seattle IANS, which is one of the largest groups, at least here in the Pacific Northwest. They have about 10,000 members now.
Holy cow.
And I interviewed 9 people while I was up there, but almost every city has it. If you go to IANDS.org, you can look up which is the closest one to you. And they're really cathartic. People can go there and be with other people who had the experience that aren't going to look at you weird, and they're not going to say you're crazy. They're just, like Louisa likes to say, she's in AA also, and she says when she goes to IANS, she's just another garden variety near-death experiencer. Just like when she goes to Alcoholics Anonymous, she's just another garden variety alcoholic. That's how it is.
Sharon, so, you know, we've had some fun, and I appreciate you being open-minded and allowing us to kind of gently poke fun and have fun, because it's all done in love and respect. It's just funny aspects of the story. But I do have a serious question, and one I don't want to bring you down with, but I'm just curious. You've had three near-death experiences and one pre-death or pre-life experience, I guess you could call it. What do you do now with this gift? I mean, you're here for a reason, Sharon. You know, see, I would put so much pressure on me. I'd feel like I've got to be the one to cure cancer or, you know, lift a bus off of a bunch of kids. You know, I'd feel like anything less would be a waste of this gift that keeps being given to me. Are you constantly seeking your purpose at this point?
Well, I wrote a book about a couple of my near-death experiences, and I'm helping Heather with her project. Mm-hmm. I go to different places and I give talks about my near-death experience, and I'm thankful to people like you who put me on your show.
Yeah, until you have to go back for your final life review and relive this entire interview over again. Then we'll see how happy you are about having been on the show. Jesus is going to go, Jesus, hey,
I'm sorry in my prayers tonight before I go to sleep.
Yeah, he's going to be like, Sharon, it's good to see you, babe, but we got to talk about this. What was this all about?
Well, at least I told him he was cute.
That's right. Yeah. I'm just curious about that, you know, because I face that on a regular basis. I should have been dead a few times, and sometimes I just feel like I put a lot of pressure on myself. Why am I still here? Why did all these other people die in my life and around me, and I've continued to live after some harrowing experiences I probably shouldn't be here for? And, you know, I try to do what I can to make other people's lives better, but I always still feel like I'm falling short. You know, so I again, I've got this kind of survivor's guilt and remorse almost, and not knowing, you know, how do you progress in a situation like this, you know, especially when you've survived things that should have killed most people, Sharon.
The one thing that I was told specifically by Jesus, and that is, whatever you do in your life, however big or small it is that you do, mm-hmm. do it with love, because that's the biggest thing, and that's what you're going to see in your life review, and that's what God cares about the most.
Well, that's a pretty good message.
It doesn't matter what it is you do, do it with love.
Now, I'll try to forgive myself then and back off the want and desire to feel like I've got to try to save the world somehow, because that's been a big part of it ever since I've dealt with this. And I didn't even get the cool review. I didn't get the audience with Jesus. I have nothing that I can remember from any of these situations. So it's weird, but I did have, and I've talked about it on the show. I did have a death visit from my grandfather after he passed away. And like you mentioned earlier about how vivid everything, the colors are crisp. The memory is more clear in my head than any memory I have of my grandfather living.
Was this asleep or awake?
Yeah, it was asleep. It was a dream visitation.
Wonderful.
And the memory was very crisp, like you said. I mean, the vibrancy of the colors and the smells and the sounds, it was more crisp and clean than any memory I've ever had. And that was 28 years ago that occurred. And it's still as vivid a memory as, oh, it just happened.
Was that as he died or after he died?
It was after he died, because I don't deal with death well. He was my hero. Yeah. Growing up, and when he passed, I took it incredibly bad, and I was in a very dark place. And then a month or so after his death is when I had that experience, and he came to me and said, "We need to talk," and put me straight on some stuff. And again, it brought me some comfort and happiness, but I still have never gotten over the fear of death from it. So, you know, again, I kind of feel like I let him down because I didn't, I wasn't healed by the visitation.
Oh, wow.
It does sound like you do need to forgive yourself which I heard you say. So you should really do that.
Yeah, well, I'll get around to it.
You're beating yourself up about it.
Yeah, it's hard not to. You know, you put these thoughts of what you're experiencing. And, you know, I'm wondering, are there people like that that you meet at these groups that kind of deal with the same sense that they feel like, oh, I'm back, but I just feel like I'm not living up to my potential?
I think people just want to go back and they don't want to go through these states. A lot of people are like that. They don't want to jump through these hoops, and they think right. this is dumb, and they're mm-hmm. mad, and we're just barbarians down here.
Right.
I've heard it. There was one lady I interviewed on the phone. She wouldn't even talk to me on camera, and she kind of bitched out a session to me that she's so ticked off because you go up there, you get everything, you know everything, you know what love and life is about, and then you come back here and we're all just like cavemen, just like picking our boogers. You know,
right? But that's something good to look forward to. It's like Christmas morning, right? You know that Christmas morning's gonna rock. You know there's gonna be cool gifts and stuff waiting at the end of the ride. That would bring me a lot of comfort. You know, I get the whole feeling of, man, but I was there. But you know what? I know I'm gonna get to go back. That, I think, to me would just bring me an insane amount of peace. And I better be careful, because if I keep talking about that, I want God to go, all right, you want it? Here comes a near-death experience. Yeah. On my way home tonight, Tim and I get shuttled out my window because I wanted to have that experience. Yeah, so that's it. It's fascinating stuff and interesting stories. Are you still collecting people's experiences and stories for your docuseries, Heather, if our listeners would like to share their stories with you?
I am not currently, because I'm still trying to finish up season one of mm-hmm. Consciousness Continues. Episode one is going to be out on Amazon soon. The book and the short film are out there. The short film's available for free with commercials or uh-huh. on Prime. And I'm going to put episode one on Prime also. So that will be out there in the next month. Look for Consciousness Continues episode one. But after I get a ways into this and finishing season one,
right.
Then I'm going to start up again with season two, providing that it's, what am I trying to say? I have enough income to keep doing it.
Sure.
You know, it needs to start to pay for itself here eventually.
Will you remind us, shoot me an email when it comes out, and we will make sure to pass that link on and information to our listeners. Because I know that, you know, nobody's going to remember to check it again in a month. But if you can hit me up, I will make sure that we remind our listeners to check out the docuseries and the episode one when it comes out.
Great. I definitely will.
All right.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Heather Dominguez. Again, the project is called Consciousness Continues, Near-Death Experiences and the After Effects. Sharon Milliman, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for sharing your multiple experiences, you overachiever, you. And what it's like. In closing, Heather, let me ask you one thing. You said the after effects are just as important, or maybe more so than the near-death experiences themselves. Can you kind of encapsulate that for us? What do you find is really the takeaway, the benefit, or the beneficial aspect of the after effects of these situations?
You mean to the experiencer?
Yes.
It is that they can see spirits or sense spirits around them. So this veil has been lifted and they're able to give comfort to other people and communicate with the other side. So, for example, a lot of the psychics that maybe even you interview or mediums, most of them have had some sort of near-death experience or near-death-like experience, which brought them to have that gift. So it's an interesting way to look at it. And I don't know if you've ever looked at it that way, but that's most of them. That's how they got there in the first place.
Very that's cool. True. And do you have those abilities now, Sharon? Are you mediumistic?
Yes, I am.
All right. And do you see or do you hear these spirits now?
I can see them. They look as solid as you are and they just pop up, and I don't conjure them or anything. They just pop up. And when they pop up, they, usually have something to say to someone.
And do you feel it's your duty when these spirits make themselves known to tell that person, no matter what the message is that's about to come through to them?
Yes, and it's usually a loved one that wants to tell them that they love them and that they have something to say. Yeah.
All right. Very mm-hmm. cool. And
you know, I just thought of one other thing, David, I want to say. The other thing that's a commonality and a lot of near-death experiencers mm-hmm. is they get into some way that helps people that are dying. And what's really interesting is that it's really common that people will get into hospice work or on the other side of it, in their own personal work, they'll work with souls that are lost, that haven't crossed, that are like stuck on this plane, but they're not crossing. So it's like hospice on both sides.
Wow. I've done that too.
Yeah.
Great stuff, ladies. I'll look forward to the documentary, the book. We'll put all the links up, and please, let's keep in touch. And as you find more stories, Heather, let's talk and revisit this, okay?
Oh, that would be great.
And thank Sharon, do us a favor. Stick around for a while. Stop trying to check out all the time, would you? You're stuck here. This is the Hotel California. You can check out anytime you like, but apparently you can never leave. So just remember that. Thank you guys for joining us. Friday, Will Jevning will join us as we talk about cannibal giants of the Haunted Valley, predatory behaviors of Bigfoot. That's when we return on Friday. And I'll be back hosting Coast to Coast on April 8th. Again, if you're not familiar with it, it's best in overnight talk radio. They talk about all the fringe elements, things that you hear on our show and more. And they are on 7 nights a week. I am lucky enough to join them 2 to 3 times a month as a guest filling in host. Tonight, George Norrie has Pet Health and Roswell and Alien Secrets. First half, a digital artist, blogger, lecturer, and founder of the world's largest pet health page on Facebook called Planet Paws, Rodney Habib will discuss his journey looking for answers for the epidemic of cancer and diabetes in pets. He believes the diet most of us feed our pets is drastically eroding their health and longevity. Second half of the show, author and researcher L.A. Marzulli will share newly revealed details about the Roswell UFO crash obtained from a deathbed confession, as well as info on underground bases, the government's collusion with Greys, abductions, hybrids, and more. That's tonight in the Best in Overnight Talk Radio with George Norrie. You can find information at coasttocoastam.com. And remember, if you want to find a quick way to listen to it, you can always listen to it from our home station here at knsiradio.com. It's on from midnight till 4 a.m. Central Time on knsiradio.com. Then you'll be able to hear whenever I host Coast to Coast as well. And we want to thank KNSI for allowing us to record all of our podcasts from their studios. For Tim Dennis, I'm Dave Schrader. Special thanks to our guests, Heather Dominguez and Sharon Milliman, for being here with us this evening and the Consciousness Continues talk. And be kind to one another, love one another, live a good life, and enjoy every minute of it because it is fleeting. We'll be back tomorrow with more of the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness.